Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
This is a space for showcasing conversations about all the interesting and important things the faculty and students are doing at FCAP.
What we hope is to have engaged and informed conversations focused on current issues of the day. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Speakable. I'm your producer, Natalie Dusek, and Milena Dromeva is your host. Today, we're sharing part two of our conversation with Sarah Louise Turner and Bea Brigidy, both teaching enhancement specialists at the Center for Educational Excellence. Last time, the conversation focused on the perspective of educators working in higher education past the COVID-19 pandemic, and today, Bea and Sarah share a bit more about what they've seen from the student perspective. Thanks for being here. Tune in, follow, and subscribe.
I work as an educational developer for inclusive teaching at the Center for Educational Excellence, and I teach sessionally for the history department.
I'm Sarah Louise Turner, and I work as an educational developer in our Center for Educational Excellence.
What are your thoughts for students in terms of a kind of pandemic postmortem, you know, what that they are burnt out, that I can tell. I've had I've had students email me. I've had students while we were online learning tell me, I am so sorry, I just cannot get out of bed. It's not that the course is early. Yeah. It's not, they're up. Yeah. They just cannot show up. And they're emailing me not even to ask for what can I do and can I submit things late, but just to say, I'm so sorry, I can't seem to be able to show up. Mm-hmm. And I've had somebody sign up for an in-person class and they couldn't get out of bed. And the two times that I had to, because of strikes, mm-hmm. I had to take the class online, that student was there and engaging, chiming in, talking, speaking, engaging. And unfortunately, you know, I mean, it's an in-person class. I can see that you would want an online class, but for some reason, they were not able to show up. So we're seeing more and more of these situations where, I mean, we've been talking about mental health, but I think that's such a catch-all. And I think burnout is it's a mental health thing, but it's also a little bit something different if you think of it as something that happens to you when you're expending all this energy in a way that's not aligning with your values, with your goals.
I think it's full circle relevance, honestly.
Relevance.
I do. I think we have the relevance of, you know, the subject matter for sure and the career, but there is also the personal relevance, correct? Which is the values that we're talking here about. It's okay, but how am I going to spend my day? What's going to happen? I'm going to wake up and then I'm going to get ready for school. And then I get to my school and then I'm going to see my friends. And then I'm going to sit on this class that I don't feel quite prepared because yesterday I wanted to just hang out. I just did not want to do any work because I deserve to have time to just walk my dog. And all of these things are quite important. And then their sense of responsibility, right? I need to do all of this to be able to be present. Yeah, but for me to be present, I need also to be prepared. And so, in fact, we start to piling up a lot. And I think that folks start to think, students are thinking, how am I going to do this? And is this what I want to do with my life? And what is? And then they start to ask themselves, is this relevant for who I am and who I want to be in the world? And then they ended up looking to, and is this university as a whole what I want, the place I want to be? And so, honestly, I'm not answering your question.
Oh, you are.
Yeah. And I want to pick up on that with, is this university the place I want to be? Because I at the end of this course, I had a student who gave a speech and he started weeping during the speech. And the speech was about showing up to classes where no one cared. And that's what he said. It hurts. He didn't say it hurts my soul, but what was communicated was, what hurts my soul is when I show up and no one wants to be here. And that was, he said, the majority of my experiences here have been a feeling of showing up when the other students don't want to be here, maybe the person who's in charge of the class don't want to be here, or even the perception that that's the case.
Right.
Right. And he said that, and the speech was all about how do we reimagine education and bring vibrancy?
Yes, yes,
but
yes.
His main argument, and he literally was crying.
I want to cry right now.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And maybe that is what the pandemic has shed light to all of us, is the question of how can we make a place where everyone wants to be, care enough to be here?
Yes.
Students, profs alike, staff, you know, how can this be the place? And what boundaries are gentle boundaries that we're going to need in order to care to be here? I don't know about you, but I feel like we all had a great coffee, just inspirational for this conversation. And I think it's important because this might be the core of relevance, motivation, role of the university and how to move forward and like you said, Milena, at the beginning of our conversation today, really we are starting to see these students who are coming out of this high school experience, and we will see the elementary school students in the future too. So
oh
it is
God, don't long. Scare me.
I know.
I hope the school system compensates by the time they come to university. Don't tell me this is going to.
I really feel. I know, but it is one of those long term impact in teaching and learning.
And we have to accept that.
Right? We do.
We're a little bit fighting it all.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think to add on what you said, the pandemic has highlighted is that the return to the status quo as the way things are, it just doesn't feel right. Maybe it was never right. Maybe we were all tired of it, but we were going on and it was, you know, the same, the usual, you know, things were going on, and it's just trying to get back to this normal. It's not working and it's burning everybody out, students and teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm hearing in that isn't an inauthenticity, right?
Inauthenticity, yes.
Again, goes, and I want to pull out something that you said that I think was so brilliant.
My gosh.
But you said the coffee that we must have had to be able to have this conversation must have been really good. And I just want to point out that we're having this conversation in August, where we actually have a little bit of breathing space, the three of us.
Yes.
So how do we provide the coffee or the breathing space to be able to have these conversations?
I love that.
I think we need that too.
I do too.
You know, and I know contextually, like I know you've come back from holiday, right?
I have.
So
definitely have. That
can you tell?
Just came back. From
literally,
holiday.
My first day back is today.
Thank you for coming.
Absolutely. But I do feel like even the fact that I have my little list of conversation topics, listed here, I thought to myself, I had time to do my little list and come to the space. And even if I barely looked at it, I think this is the invitation, right, for folks out there, whoever is listening, is what is it that will make you care enough to show up? And maybe we need that data. Everybody just answering that question will make us think, right? If you can think of one one thing that will make that will help us. That will help us understand. I certainly will think for myself. What I need.
Well, I like that you said one thing, because once again, you know, the question is so broad and it feels kind of overwhelming. But then when you said, think of one thing, I thought, okay, yeah, I can think of one
thing. It's just one thing. And maybe that one thing is going to, you know, crystallize and manifest, who knows, something more positive and really a sense of, oh, direction, right? Like, yeah. I really loved what you said, Milena, too, about, look at us, throwing flowers all over ourselves today.
It.
Good for us. But I really love what you said around, we can't deny that there is no way back.
There's no way back.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that, because there isn't. And as we shouldn't look back. We should look forward. And look forward in a good way, in a way that cares for each other. And I think that's the key that's actually the balance, right? That's the counter, I guess, the anti-burnout is caring.
And what I could just visualize, even when you said that, is just that feeling of, as we each offer that one thing which feels manageable, I just envisioned seeing everyone else's one thing and feeling that resonance, right? So then we have this collective kind of vision that emerges.
I love that. Yeah.
Right?
We have to continue this, I feel.
Yes, we have to continue this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I want to share is, before this job, I worked for close to a year for a service innovation social enterprise. And also, these were all people that were designers, but designers of process and experience. And the kind of the brain of that organization, her name is Sarah Schulman. She used to say, but is it delightful? Where is the delight?
Oh.
And delightful design was the word of the day every day. And we did so much actually to make the workspaces delightful. We would start with each day with a free writing, like a writing prompt, 10 minutes. And then we'd share. And then we'd move on, you know? It was 15 minutes tops. You know, it didn't waste any work time. And then we would finish with a postmortem every day. And we would talk about, you know, what was a success, what was a challenge. But we didn't do it so prescriptively that it would start to feel kind of routine and like, oh, you have to do it now, it's a chore. It was just like there was a real effort to inject delight in the workplace and inject delight in the ideas and to make things, and part of it was making things pretty. Like if we were going to, say, run a workshop and create like some materials, we made those with color, with fonts, with like silly little things, but that made things so delightful and kind of made you be excited to engage.
I think you just literally told us that needs to be delightful for you to care. And I love it. Is it?
Yeah, that was always the question.
I love it.
Delightful.
I love that.
Yeah, and it's funny when you say that, right? Because those are... like, those are actually activities that I do in my personal life. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I start out and I do, like, my free write in the morning. And at the end of the day, I sit with, you know, just that little bit about what has been delightful. Like, what did pop? What resonated with me? And sometimes it's a lot of effort to come up with those things. And I just love this idea of how do we shape a culture and an institution? Because, you know, this institution is in a hard place right now.
It is.
You know, it's in a hard place. I was telling someone, you know, I'd been at SFU for all these years and you know, the budget issues have had a weightiness and we've lost members of our community. And so, you know, how do we both honor that and then begin to imagine what we might want to create moving forward?
I agree. And I think recapturing also the things that we love about this institution, I feel like in my positionality as a faculty member, you know, especially in a very critical department, we do rightfully so critique the institution, of course. But sometimes it's that can stand, I think, a little bit in the way of you know, I mean, we're here because we love it. We love learning. We love teaching and we love knowledge.
Yeah.
And we think it's really important.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to recapture that that passion, you know, and I think it's important to recapture the passion to find the relevance full circle, to find the relevance of this institution. What is relevant when it's not possible to articulate in a really concrete way the immediate, you know, job opportunities that students are going to have? Still, there is so much wealth.
Absolutely. Yes. I think a lot about that. And I think right now I'm putting together the syllabus for the course that I'm teaching in the fall. And I'm thinking, okay, this is great. I have my educational outcomes / goals here. And you know, the plans, what I'm going to do. And then I'm thinking to myself, okay. But now I want to, what is it that I want my students to, you know, to do? And what kind of impact do I want to have in their lives 3 years from now, 5 years from now? And so I want that significant learning objectives as part of what I'm going to do in the classroom. And I think that SFU provides you with the space to do that, to ask yourselves those questions and bring this to the classroom and talk to the students about that. And I've been to other universities and I taught in other universities in Canada and in the United States. And it's not everywhere that you have the flexibility to make certain decisions, even when it comes to learning outcomes, right? And I think that for me is a jewel. And the fact that you just described that, of course, you are in the School of Communication, and in communications, you're going to be critical of the university. Well, I'm so glad we are in a democratic institution.
Yes.
That's a positive for me. If I would be extremely heartbroken to be in an institution where the School of Communication couldn't or wouldn't be critical of the institution, that would make absolutely no sense to me. Right. But no, it's positive. It's incredible, optimistic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yay. Right?
This has been an episode of Speakable. Speakable is also broadcast live on CJSF SFU's campus radio at 90.1 FM. If you are a student interested in getting involved, drop us an email and stay updated on FCAT social media and at www.sfu.ca/FCAT.
How important is this station to you? Local radio by and for your community, news and information that matters to you. You won't find anything like it anywhere else. Now we need you. We need your voice to support the Community Radio Initiative. You see, radio has been there for you in those important moments, and now we need your voice. You can join the fight for the future of community radio at mycri.ca, because local voices are what shapes our community.
This is Bird Note. In the boreal forests, the broad expanse of forest lying south of the Arctic, winter temperatures routinely drop to 30 below zero. Birds that spend the winter in this harsh domain of spruce, pine, and other conifers rely on remarkable adaptations in order to survive. The spruce grouse is one such bird. Most spruce grouse, rotund, chicken-like birds that weigh about a pound, remain here all year. In the snow-free summer, they forage on the ground, eating fresh greenery, insects, and berries. But in the snowy winter, the grouse live up in the trees, eating nothing but conifer needles. Lots and lots of needles. Simple enough, right? Just keep eating. But conifer needles are both low in protein and tough to digest because they're heavy in cellulose. To meet the energy demands of winter on needles alone, spruce grouse this may seem hard to believe, grow a bigger digestive system. Their ventriculus, or gizzard, which grinds food, may enlarge by 75%. So remember the hardy spruce grouse this holiday season. As you stand back to admire a Christmas tree, somewhere in the northern forest, a grouse is nibbling away at such a tree, one needle at a time. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby, BC, striving to provide points of view that are rarely expressed in